Welcome. It's Money Sense Time. I'm your host, Brent Laux. This week, joined by Chris Kostick, Associate Portfolio Manager with PWM Private Wealth Counsel, IA Private Wealth, and Chartered Professional Accountant with PWM Financial Services, Inc. If you're a medical professional, you want to be listening to our program, Financial Planning for Medical Professionals with Chris Kostick. We're back with our program in just 2 minutes. Welcome back to our Money Sense program this weekend. Chris Kostick, Associate Portfolio Manager with PWM Private Wealth Counsel, IA Private Wealth, focusing on medical doctors, dentists, optometrists, chiropractors. Those are some of the individuals that would fit into this group of medical professionals, and that's the framework for our show today here. Chris?
Yeah, you're exactly right. So that covers a good chunk of the group that is being referenced to in this program. However, disclaimer is that the concepts I will be discussing essentially covers professionals in the medical space that through their governing body have the ability to form and operate through a professional corporation. So an example of a couple professions that were maybe not listed there would say be like a pharmacist or a registered nurse. Typically, individuals who operate, you know, in those two professions do so as employees who receive a T-4 slip at the end of the year and therefore would not incorporate. However, if you, for example, own your own pharmacy, you can most definitely form and operate through a corporation. Or, you know, we've seen cases where there's, you know, contract-based, a registered nurse, they would have that option as well. This might be, you know, a registered nurse that, say, visits northern community groups to provide services under separate contractual agreements. They might have the ability to incorporate as well. So essentially being deemed self-employed, having the ability to form a professional corporation, that's the group I'm trying to cover here today.
So this is a pretty broad-ranging group for the scope of professionals here, Chris.
Most definitely, Brent. So now that the target audience has been defined, I'll get into the opportunities that we'll explore and implement for these set of clients. So in January 2018, a number of rules were brought into play that had material tax planning impacts for specifically medical professionals forming a professional corporation, among other small business owners as well. Mm-hmm. But some of the doors closed and, you know, some others actually opened. So our team of professionals have sought to find solutions to create tax efficiency for the folks who were struck by these rule changes.
We're on the topic of finance for medical professionals with Chris Kostick. So immediate shifts to business practice to tackle some of these new rules. And I'm also guessing there are still some strategies that have held in there, Chris?
Yeah. So, for example, in the medical professional corporations that are more capital intensive in nature, so, you know, an example might be a dental practice and likely, you know, potentially a primed candidate to sell their shares to a third party down the road. Employing the use of a holding company, or let's just call it Holdco, to keep the professional corporation purified makes good sense. And this has always been a strategy that you can use. This can be done at any time through a corporate restructuring. As long as the holding company owns 10% or more of the shares of the professional corporation, this enables dividends that can be distributed over on a tax-free basis. This Holdco, to keep the professional corporation purified, is the ideal place to carry, you know, say your investment portfolio, insurance contracts, real estate, often even the building that you might own and operate the practice from.
That's interesting, Chris. So by purified, you're meaning that only the active business assets like equipment, supplies, inventory, working capital, cash, etc., that would stay in the professional corporation and everything else would be pushed out tax-free then to that holding company?
In the event you are seeking a buyer for a practice, the interested parties will, you know, highly unlikely want your investment portfolio, your life insurance, your rental property, stuff like that, and maybe not even the building that you're practicing from. Instead, they can rent it from you. So if you set up your operations such that all of these, you know, active business assets are sitting on their own and not including all those other items, this is an ideal way to attract a buyer. If they want the building, it could be moved back into the Prof Corp. On the sale of your shares, if you own 90% personally, as an example, remember you have to have 10% owned by the holding company for the tax-free dividends, that 90% of proceeds will qualify for the lifetime capital gains exemption. So in 2021 terms, that means up to $892,000 of the capital gain on the sale of your shares will be received completely tax-free.
Sounds like a smart move to any of the medical professionals that may be listening. Chris, I can see how you'd want to be planning for this type of thing early on. Now, to ensure that I'm following you correctly and highlight for our listeners, so let's say my practice is sold for $1 million. $900,000 then would come personally, and $100,000 of that would go to the holding company. So one would pay almost no tax on the personal side, and then the $100,000 gets allocated and taxed in the holding company as a capital gain. Have I got that right?
That's exactly right, Brent. The holding company would now have that $100,000 of extra cash, you know, pre-tax, I'm saying in terms, to invest. Which you can now act independently as basically a pension or retirement spending vehicle, where one can withdraw the dollars in a tax-efficient way by milking out set amounts as directed by your qualified investment advisor throughout retirement. So very similar to how an RSP or a defined contribution pension might look. Mm-hmm. It's also important to add here that is, if the professional owner of that practice is over 65 years of age and splits the income with a spouse or a common law partner, regardless of the age of the spouse or the common law partner, an aspect of the January 2018 rules, which are referred to as agent exclusion for the tax on split income, or TOSI, that does not apply. So that means that you can split the income at the age of 65. This exemption only applies to the professional's spouse or common law partner and does not apply to any other family members. So you couldn't do this with mom and dad or your kids or anything like that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to explain these TOSI rules, or the tax on split income rules, shortly in more detail, but wanted to toss in some quick notations on insurance concepts that continue to prevail as a tax planning solution to soak up retained earnings within a prof corp.
Yeah, and I certainly know the importance of having insurance to protect loved ones in providing debt coverage and setting up for living needs should something fatal happen to you. But what do you mean by soak up retained earnings there, Chris?
So depending on the success and spending needs of the underlying medical professional who operates through a prof corp, there often reaches an inflection point where the professional corporation and its associated holding company, clearly has more dollars, sitting in there than could ever be used in the lifetime of that individual or that individual's family, currently. And therefore is looking at, how to tax efficiently pass it along to the next generation. If this is the case, it won't make sense just to pull it all personally and pay, an atrocious amount of tax. Instead, I strongly recommend looking at the use of a permanent whole life or universal life policy. This can enable the sheltering of an incredible amount of wealth within it, that upon passing of that medical professional can be paid out of the corporation to the beneficiaries on a tax-free basis. Other practical applications include having the ability to leverage the policy for cash flows when needed, perhaps to seize an investment opportunity, or to use as collateral, for example, in the event of seeking to expand one's practice. Lastly, I will disclaim, and this may have been implied, but it is important to note that these permanent policies being described are investment vehicles within themselves. And as a qualified advisor or insurance professional, you should be explained what the internal rate of return is on these policies. And obviously, the higher the IRR, the better the policy will be for you.
I know there's a number of functions for corporately owned permanent insurance, and I'm sure we can get more details on that when you talk to Chris Kostick at the offices of PWM Private Wealth Council. We're taking a break. We're on the topic of financial planning for medical professionals. We're back with more Money Sense in just 2 minutes. Welcome back to our Money Sense on the topic of finance for medical professionals with Chris Kostick. Prior to the break, Chris talking a little bit about corporately owned permanent insurance. I'm guessing there's more you can share on tax planning concepts for medical professional corporations that have been intact through the January 2018 overhaul. But I guess, Chris, in the interest of time, to cover off some of the strategies that need to be changed or tweaked following those rules, can you jump into that?
Yeah, so again, January 2018 was a pretty pivotal change for a lot of these professional corporations. So we touched a bit on TOSI, or the tax on split income, and it can be a very detailed scope, so I'll keep it at kind of a high level. But there is a ways to gain back some of the tax efficiency that has been stripped away as a result of that. So firstly, the TOSI rules apply to split income received by a specified individual from a related business. A specified individual is generally someone who is resident in Canada at year end. And a related business is a business to which an immediate family member, so a spouse, parent, child, or sibling, is involved in at any time during the year. So if the amount falls within a specific exclusion, however, the income will be taxed at the recipient's marginal tax rate, which is what you want to have happen, rather than TOSI, which is at the highest marginal bracket. Exclusions include where the individual is over 18, that they are providing a labor contribution, which means that they are engaged on a regular, continuous, and substantial basis in the business. 20 hours on average per week has been deemed to be a benchmark. So that would allow you to split some income with a family member. Another option is having a reasonable return. So where a family member is 25 years of age or older, it is possible to pay that family member a reasonable amount of income in the form of dividends, representing a reasonable return on that contribution to the business. And that would be excluded from TOSI. However, while the CRA does not provide guidance on what is deemed to be reasonable, the reasonability test considers contributions to the business through a combination of work performed by the individual, property contributed, and the risks that they are taking on. But let's just say even 10% annual return for a private equity investment is considered reasonable. If they happen to have the ability to justify, say, a $50,000 contribution to the business, that's only $5,000 of income sprinkling each year. So in some ways, hardly worth the effort or the risk. Where one does not fall into one of the exclusions, like I said before, it will be taxed at the highest personal tax rate. So in conclusion, it is very hard to operate a medical professional corporation and justify any income splitting to other family members. So we need to come up with other solutions.
Yeah, I could see how the CRA might question the 20-year-old child having shares in the dental professional corporation and getting $100,000 a year in dividends, and they're not a dentist themselves. Might be a little suspect. So then what can mom or dad dentist or any of our medical professional listeners do to get money out of the corporation more tax efficiently?
So there is a concept known as surplus stripping, or, you know, other terms been used as a pipeline transaction that is, they're relatively complex in nature, but the general framework is that it converts a distribution from one's prof corp to a capital gain rather than being a typical ineligible dividend. The ideal way to do this is through a staggered approach over a calendar year. So half of the transaction, as an example, can take place in 2021, you know, say in December, and then the other half in 2022, say in January, for the tax impacts to go across, you know, 2 years of marginalized tax brackets. This is an excellent strategy in circumstances where the aggregate investment income from the corporation's portfolio starts to create issues with the small business deduction limit, known as a grind down. A year could be multiple years where there's a large personal withdrawal that is also needed. This would be helpful to get money out, you know, tax efficiently. Say if one is buying, you know, putting a big down payment on a new house or buying a cabin or something like that. This is a good way of enabling money to come out very tax efficiently if you need to do a large disbursement. So for context here, with a capital gain inclusion rate of 50% that we currently have, a $300,000 disbursement from a prop corp in the province of Saskatchewan, using, say, a surplus strip as capital gains, the tax would be about $45,000. Versus if you were taking out as a regular and eligible dividend, it would be more like $100,000. So it's more than double the tax impact.
Ouch, that's a big difference. So I'm assuming here the investments are managed the same way, then it's generally more ideal to be investing at the personal level than corporately?
Generally speaking, yes. If you can invest, you know, outside of your corporation by getting it out tax efficiently, that is a better, more tax efficient way. So within a corporation, aggregate investment income in Saskatchewan is initially taxed at approximately 51%. Once this is paid out by a dividend and is taxed personally, a 31%, approximately 31% refund comes back. So it works out to a net tax rate in the corporation of about 20%. So in very simple terms, one saves themselves that 20% layer by being able to invest, you know, just personally. So to qualify further on this, the most ideal option for tax efficiency is within a registered account. So for example, something like an RRSP, because it's clearly deferred until withdrawn in the future at lower marginal tax rates. As our listeners might know, in order to do an RRSP, however, the dollars must be sitting personally, and one must have that contribution room. And the contribution room is only made available by doing salary or payroll based on 18% of the prior year earned income up to $27,830 for 2021. So the simple solution of withdrawing whatever one needs from the company and figuring out later through a dividend is not an option to take advantage of, you know, doing a bunch of RRSPs and sheltering the investment income. So the concept that I'm going to discuss here is referred to as an independent pension plan. And for incorporated medical professionals in their late 30s who have been taking a salary and maximizing their RRSPs along the way, this could enable them anywhere from 25 to 30% allocations directly from the company, avoiding the personal tax element, into a tax shelter vehicle. And remember, under normal circumstances, 18% is the max, up to a certain amount.
Sounds like an RRSP on steroids, basically.
Yes, this methodology, when implemented correctly, enables a substantial amount of tax-deferred investment growth that would otherwise, you know, potentially be taxed at 50% or greater when you combine the corporate and personal tax,
That's okay.
Yes, this methodology, when implemented correctly, enables a substantial amount of tax-deferred investment growth that would otherwise be taxed at a combined tax rate of could be, you know, 50% or greater when factoring in the corporate and personal element. The beauty of compound interest, equal rates of return in an RRSP or an IPP, you know, with an IPP having an extra 7 to 10% of contribution room eligibility, one could have theoretically millions of dollars more in retirement assets than the typical conventional approach of taking a salary and just doing an RRSP. Furthermore, being able to jam so much corporate dollars into an independent pension plan or IPP will better prevent from the investments in the corporation causing a grind down to the small business deduction limit.
Some interesting concepts that you've presented here on the topic of finance for medical professionals, Chris Kostick. Any of those professionals listening would like to find out more, what would you suggest?
Just give us a call. You know, can discuss more about the insurance concept, the whole concept, independent pension plans, surplus stripping. Give us a call at 306-975-9500 to get in contact with one of our advisors.
Thanks for your time, Chris.
Thank you, Brent.
This is Money Sense. Money Sense was prepared by Kevin Hegedus and Kevin Hawkinson, portfolio managers for IA Private Wealth. This is not an official program of IA Private Wealth, and the opinions expressed during this show are those of the portfolio managers only and do not necessarily reflect those of IA Private Wealth. IA Private Wealth, Inc. is a member of the Canadian Investor Protection Fund and the Investment Industry Regulatory Organization of Canada. IA Private Wealth is a trademark and business name under which IA Private Wealth, Inc. operates. IA Private Wealth does not provide any income tax preparation service and does not supervise or review any income tax returns. Only products and services offered through IA Private Wealth, Inc. are covered by the Canadian Investor Protection Fund. Information provided in this broadcast is general in nature and should not be construed as providing legal, accounting, and/or tax advice. Should you have any specific questions and/or issues in these areas, please consult your legal, tax, and/or accounting advisor. PWM Financial Services, Inc. is an independent and separate company from IA Private Wealth, Inc. You've been listening to Money Sense.